We're back on the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm your co-host, Jason Snell. Across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
You've been doing this for 5 years now. You've been at The Hollywood Reporter for 5 years, 5 years since you left The Chronicle. It's amazing.
It is kind of amazing.
It's hard to believe.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah. It's good.
I'm happy about that decision. Yeah, thank you.
Good decision. I was just talking to somebody the other day who I used to work with and about how, you know, it's hard to make decisions that make change like that. And then you look back even a year later and you're like, oh, that was really better off for all concerned that, you know, that you made the decision. But it's hard to make it in the moment.
Yeah, it was. Certainly back in 2010, it was, because I was at the Chronicle. I was doing whatever I wanted, only going in a couple days a week, had a bunch of friends. It was great. I didn't know no one. And if I decided not to do something, no one gave me any grief. It was a good split. But the jump to THR was not only big for my career, but it was, I think, the right thing to do. And I feel really, really good there.
And now you never have to go into the office, right?
Now my home is my office.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Wherever there's a TV set,
I'll be there.
I'm working.
The Grapes of Wrath? I don't know.
Yeah.
I was
calling that down.
Wherever there's a TV set, Tim will be there watching it.
I will be there. You will feel my presence.
So in the last week, I watched the Agent X pilot.
Yes! Mm-hmm. Woohoo! Tell me about it.
I didn't do any drinking.
I know, that was a problem.
Which I probably should have. But I did watch the Agent X pilot. I thought it was fun and, you know, not particularly intelligent, but I thought it was fun. There were lots of moments. It felt like, I'm trying to think of what it reminded me of. It reminded me of the kind of shows that were on, like, on the weekend, like during the daytime, like syndicated action shows. It had that kind of vibe to it a little bit. It was more that than Alias or something like that. That was a little glossier, and it was more like, you know, that there's the climactic scene at the end. Spoilers for Agent X, by the way, which we've totally spoiled. There's that scene where they're fighting like on scaffolding on the construction of the Russian embassy.
Yes.
Where there are several choices that are made in the fight scene that are completely baffling. It's like the Russian lady with the variable accent is out there, and she's basically asking Agent X to come out and fight her, and it's very clear she has some sort of plan, and he's like, okay, I guess I'll just go stand out on the scaffolding. Like, why would you do that? She has nowhere to go. It doesn't make any sense. But that show, there's a whole lot of that. The whole vice president thing is pretty funny. The moment where the president is, she tries to talk to the president about it and basically is told, you must never speak of it with him, even though he was the vice president and so he knows. That was kind of funny. And the moment that made me laugh out loud is there's a moment where they're in the Situation Room and the vice president is there and she realizes that she needs to be the one to make this thing happen. Everybody else, all the joint chiefs are like, oh, what are we going to do? If only we had an agent, but we don't. So we have to do nothing. And I expected her to like bolt out of the room. Like, I got a thing, I gotta go so that I can get Agent X in there. It was silly and I love how you can plug a flash drive into something and completely own the system immediately. So that was pretty good too. But I meant to keep a running tally of all the things in it that I thought were ridiculous, but there were a lot of them. I like the key. She has a key that opens the secret panel. I'm a sucker for secret bookcases.
Oh,
this show's got them.
Who is it? Mm-hmm. Secret bookcase right by the fireplace that slides open.
Slides
I am
open.
In
you
Batman.
Go, you go right down there, and she goes to the Agent X cave, and it's that was I don't know if I'm going to watch more Agent X or not, but it was I was entertained, and I was entertained partially because of what was on the screen that entertained me and partially because the things that were on the screen that made me laugh because they were ridiculous.
Oh, so. Yeah. There was a lot of not a thing.
Oh,
stuff,
man. Though. Yeah.
I love Gerald McRaney just like tapping the iPad and like stuff shut down.
Oh, yeah. It's all magic. Yeah.
We've downloaded,
it totally works.
We've downloaded a back-end thing, and now you have access at all the doors. Everything's wiped. Everything gets wiped within seconds. I love that.
And they're the hints of the conspiracies to come. It's like, that man who saved you, what did you see his face? And the girl says, no, I didn't. And so why do they want to know the identity of Agent X? I don't know. I really don't know.
Let me ask you an obscure question that no one watching this, having not watched the series, will understand this. Did you laugh when you saw them driving the Russian taxi?
No.
In the mountains? Did you get to that part? Was that a second episode?
No, that's the second episode.
Oh, okay.
That's the second episode. I haven't seen that.
Okay.
I haven't seen that.
Never mind.
All right. Russian taxi. Yeah. You've ruined everything now for
spoiler,
episode
Russian
two
taxi.
Of Agent X.
I'm gonna keep watching. It didn't do great in the ratings, sadly.
Yeah.
In fact, not very well at all. But I'm gonna keep watching because I like it. And I did make a drinking game event. I posted that somewhere. I put it on Twitter. You know, the thing about that app, the list app, is people can't really get it unless they can't get my list unless I physically place them on Facebook or
right.
I can put it on Twitter and they can read one, but if they want to like get my own and follow me, they have to have the app to follow me.
Huh. Maybe you should send me the list and I'll post it in the show notes or something.
Okay, I will do that.
We'll put the Agent X drinking game so other people can play. Drink responsibly.
Drink
also,
drink
you're not watching television responsibly, so at least you should drink responsibly.
Nice. I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I see what you did there.
I can report back in on the third episode of Supergirl, too, which I'm finding kind of middling. I feel like it's still trying to find its way, and it's still trying to get out from under the shadow. I've had a couple people describe it to me, and I thought about this, too. It feels like a spinoff of a TV show about Superman, except that show doesn't exist. But it's still sort of in the shadow of that TV show that doesn't exist. And I want them to stop talking about Superman. Like, either show him, which they contractually can't do other than, like, CGI. There was a CGI Superman. There was an instant message chat with Superman. But you can't actually have an actor to play him because then the licensing, whatever. At that point, just stopped. No Superman. Just stop talking about him. And maybe they'll get there. But that was the thing that drove me crazy about it is, like, I'm not watching Superman show. Just stop talking about Superman. You're never going to show him. Why are you talking about him?
Right. So you think they should not just focus on Supergirl? This is the name of the show.
That is. She is the lead, and I think that she's very likable. I also was encouraged in episode three that they sort of set up a little headquarters for the Supergirl squad or whatever. That Jimmy Olsen and her not a boyfriend coworker, they have a little like Batcave now. That they can go to, and that I'm encouraged by because the other alternative is this shadowy government conspiracy agency that's her sister works for, and that is a snooze to me. It's like, I just don't care about the shadowy government agencies. I'd much rather have kind of a ragtag team who's doing it for themselves. So I'm encouraged. I will note the your friend and mine, the masked scheduler.
Yes.
Wrote his piece where he's writing, I don't know if you've seen these, it's delightful, where he does the Book of the Dead, where he determines whether a show will live or die. And he just did his for Supergirl and said, hey, CBS likes to experiment with stuff that's a little out of their comfort zone. And he thinks that it'll be not only run for this year, but he declared that it will probably come back for next year, too, because that's what CBS does. So I think
it's
that might be true.
That's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
So,
but my question to you is this: if you are watching the third episode of Supergirl, and it's not quite there for you, is that something you'll continue to do?
I'm going to keep watching it because I think that it's got potential, and because I have some faith in the producers. If I didn't know that the producers behind Flash and Arrow were doing this, I would be on the fence about whether to continue. But, you know, I'm still very slowly watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so don't listen to me.
True, right? Okay.
I have no credibility here. but anyway, it's a fascinating show because of what it's trying to be, that it doesn't want to be the CW, but it can't really be CBS. And so it's in this kind of, and they're very clearly trying to find their feet in a way that The Flash, as you remember, because you raved about it last year, The Flash was pretty much there on day one.
It was there. And I think that's important.
And Supergirl is not. They're still figuring it out. They may figure it out, but it's not there yet.
Well, that's the thing that kind of bugs me in this whole world, and I'm wondering if genre series have maybe more resistance to this problem. I just think...
Right. Do they have more rope to hang themselves with, or at least to get a little more slack time because there's a genre show and you want to, you know, if you're a fan of the genre shows, maybe you stick with them more than if it was a procedural and you're just like, I'm out after, like, whatever I did with... What was the show that I dumped in episode two? Doodle Booty. Blind Spot. I just, episode two, I was like, yeah, I'm out. And is there more loyalty maybe that the genre shows get than something else?
I think that there probably is. I mean, I don't have a vested interest in Supergirl. I thought it was cute, but needed to be much better in the second episode. But then I was never motivated to see the second episode. Right. So that's
And it wasn't much better. It was pretty much the same. That's the problem is it's like a failure to launch kind of thing where it just hasn't come together.
And that worries me because now that I trust you, so now that you said the next two are not like that, I'm thinking, okay, those 2 hours I can devote to something else.
I would say I'll let you know if it picks up. That's
okay.
This is essentially what I said about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the first year. And it did pick up way too late, but it did actually pick up. And maybe that'll happen here. But it's just sort of, it's still feeling kind of sluggish and like they don't even know. Honestly, it feels like they're regretting some of their choices from the pilot. You know,
really?
It feels to me like the whole sister works for a government conspiracy kind of thing. I'm not sure their heart is in it. I feel like when they set up their own little Supergirl cave, that's like a sign that they're not going to have her be solving mysteries with the government conspiracy people. After all,
yeah, they need more options.
But you know, they're going to rather than just sort of write them out, they seem to be sort of playing the whole thing out, and that's kind of boring because they're boring. But
well, for the record, I want everybody to know that I'm taking the 2 hours I could have devoted to the next two episodes of Supergirl, and I'm devoting those 2 hours to the next 2 hours of Agent X.
Oh.
That's what I'm doing.
That's probably a bad decision. Hey, okay. We should talk about Amazon because there's a lot of Amazon action going on. You and Dan Feinberg did a piece on THR about the merits of the pilots because there's Amazon pilot season is here, and one of the pilots from the last Amazon pilot season is back, which is Man in the High Castle. So there's a lot of Amazon action happening right now.
Yeah, and that's it's funny because when I went on and I was like I made this kind of veiled tweet when I was watching these because. You know, Dan and I, we did 6 new Amazon pilots. And I said, wow, these are the level of awfulness on some of these pilots is kind of astonishing. And the reaction I got from people was, are you talking about X? And it was Amazon pilots from many moons ago. So I don't think people understand the process. So like people were saying, are you talking about Man in the High Castle? I'm like, oh, no, because that's already been made and is coming out, in fact, in a week.
Right.
So I don't think people understand, like, the process. And someone said, oh, did you see more of show X? And I was like, no, that's not the current
batch. It is confusing.
It's confusing. But anyway, yeah, we went over those 6. We are dramatically different in a couple of them, but we did all 6 pilots.
I thought I saw this stream by on Twitter. Did you just not like them all?
No, not really true. I would say the only one that I liked where I thought, okay, I want to see more of this was a drama, one of the drama pilots called Patriot. It has its flaws, but it was different enough. Like it's really trying to juggle comedy and espionage / spy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan didn't like it so much. He thought that it just, I mean, we both agree that it's incredibly hard to something that has those kind of stylistic things. And by the way, people who are listening can go on Amazon right now.
Watch them all.
And watch all of those. So I think that they should. I take that back. I'll save everybody a couple of hours in just a minute. But first to Patriot. What I liked about it is he's a guy who's like in Black Ops, and but there's funny elements to it too. And one of my favorite parts of it is that he has like something went dramatically wrong on his last assignment, and he's kind of having a PTSD moment. And he's channeling that into folk songs. He's a folk singer, and they're super. It's a very funny idea and a very funny joke that keeps getting called back to, where he's singing, and he's a good singer. He's singing these folk songs that are like literal interpretations of his past missions. You have to see it to believe it, and I loved it. I was like, now I want the whole soundtrack of him singing a song about this last mission that he was on, and that part was very funny. So I thought there was hope there. So my problem here's the problem. You haven't watched these yet, right?
No, Jason? I haven't.
Okay, so in the comedy category, and I say comedy loosely, there's a series called Z. Basically, it's Z, the beginning of everything. It's about Zelda Fitzgerald, and it stars Christina Ricci. I would tell our listeners to skip that one. So there's a half an hour saved right there. Yeah, the accents on that are very, very bad. Very, very bad. The one comedy that is getting the most notice out of Amazon right now is Tig Notaro's series called One Mississippi. Uh-huh. She's an amazing talent. Her stand-up is amazing. And Dan really liked this, but I just didn't think this is a good vehicle for her. I think that she's tough to write for a series and star in. And I just didn't think that this pilot called One Mississippi, I don't think that pulled it off very well. Huh. So that was my sort of bigger problem there. The other one that I think might have hope, and this is probably the last of the hopeful ones, by the way, there is a comedy called Heiston, and H-I-G-H-S-T-O-N. And it's kind of interesting. It's about mental illness, and the person, the kid, who is actually a very interesting young actor, he talks to people. So the conceit here, and you know, we've seen that a million times in all these, a person has a brain problem and he's going to see people. In this one, though, the twist is that he actually sees celebrities.
Hmm.
And they give him advice. They comment on him in whatever form that they are in, and they give him advice on his life. And so every week there's allegedly going to be one or two or maybe three celebrity cameos, which I think is part of the problem of the series. Is I think that they're trying to book the cameos and focusing on the cameos less than they are the other writing. But in this case, Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Shaq are the people he sees. And it's a little goofy. And at times I'm like, oh my God, this is so not working on the biggest flop moment of like an idea flopping upon itself. Like I kept thinking to them, okay, you're filming this scene with Flea and Shaq acting stupid in his room, and you must be thinking while you're filming it, oh, this was a terrible idea. But on the other hand, there's times when they're running around and doing something with Shaq and Flea, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, this is weird, but in a funny way. So there's hope for it, but I felt like Heisen was a little bit too precious for me. Hmm. And then I just really, really hated pretty much everything after that. There's a Western called Edge, which might have been the worst pilot I've ever seen. And strangely enough, Dan liked it. He said it was kind of a grindhouse, over the top, sea level Western. And I said, well, that's being super generous, because to me it was one of the worst hours I've ever spent watching. So that was a no go. And then there was this super annoying. And which you'll love. It's I hate the title. It's called Good Girls Revolt. And it's a period piece set in 1969. And it's all about, weren't the 60s kind of crazy? So yeah, who needs that? But this is what you love. They open up, the movie opens up, the pilot, and it says Oakland. Taps and says Oakland. And it's a scene from the Altamont concert with the Rolling Stones.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. That was so
close
good.
Enough.
Yeah. And then they said something else, which didn't take place anywhere near it. And they're like, well, oh, yeah, but if it's, you know, over in Berkeley, all this is happening. I'm like, nope, that's not happening in Berkeley. So, yeah, they messed up the Oakland connection pretty badly. But, yeah, it was like it's got this fake Nora Ephron in it, and it's got all these people working at a fake – literary magazine, and they're going to be covering the 60s, man. And yeah, it was annoying. So I the only ones I think anybody should watch, they should definitely watch Tig Notaro's thing, One Mississippi, to see if they like it, because she's kind of a breakout star. And I think they should maybe look at Patriot, because it's kind of interesting. But other than that, it was a pretty weak batch for Amazon.
Yeah, that's too bad, especially since in the last batch, there was such a find in Man in the High Castle, which is now actually not a pilot, but a series coming out very soon. Did you have reviewed that now, right? Or I don't know if it's...
I have reviewed it. It's not live yet. Yeah, I think it's going to go I think it's going to go live in the long version, which means the online version, which means the one you should read, on Tuesday. So I'll have that posted on Tuesday. I very much liked it. Yeah, and it, I mean, just quickly, if you recap, I think that Amazon has done well with they've done well with Transparent, obviously, and I think they did well with the comedy Red Oaks. I don't know if anybody's watching that, but dramatically, I mean, Bosch is not a very big deal, and I think that the thing for them that kind of stands out is Transparent, and now I think Man in the High Castle is going to definitely be, quote unquote, a hit. We won't know because they don't do those kind of numbers. I would call it something that they can be proud of and people will watch. It's visually very impressive. Yeah, it's kind of a, and obviously, if people don't know the book yet, it's a Philip K. Dick book.
Unfilmable
is what they said. Yes, exactly. It's good that you noted that. It is 1962 he's won this, and they have pretty much tried to make this thing since then. And efforts to make it into a television series, Jason, started in about 2006, and there were four different tries, from the BBC to Sci-Fi to points in between, and no one wanted to commit to, A, the money involved to actually do it the way the family wanted it done. So here comes in 2015, because they developed it in 2014, here comes the Amazon version, because they've got deep pockets, thanks to your shipping. Two-day shipping, and it's good. I really liked it. I think it's – I mean, the idea that the United States lost World War II and now we are an occupied country under Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan is kind of intriguing. Visually, everything's done in dark blacks and oversaturated blacks and grays and dark greens. There's literally no color in this thing hardly at all. I noted in my review that – a propaganda poster is the only thing where you're ever going to see like a yellow or a red color. And when they smoke a cigarette on screen, the whiteness of the cigarette really pops. That's how saturated this thing is. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get you. I'm sure you're a sci-fi guy. You've probably read the novel. Am I right about that?
I don't know if I've read that one. I've read a bunch of Philip K. Dick stuff, but I'm not sure if I read that one.
Well, it's very interesting in the, I mean, they changed some things in the book. Apparently I didn't read it in the book.
You would have to, because otherwise there's nothing to, I mean, it is unfilmable in that way, but it the general concept is what if the Axis won the war and basically the Nazis have taken over the eastern part of the U.S. and the Japanese the west, and there's some resistance and free space and sort of in the Rocky Mountains, and the idea is that now that the war is over, the Germans are basically going to try to take out the Japanese,
right?
And that's it.
Yeah, and the sub where the actual title comes from, there's this mysterious person, the man in the high castle, who in the book is actually passing around a book, but in this version it's a movie reel.
Yeah,
that if you watch the movie reel, which is it's a great twist on how to make this, so you couldn't actually have people reading the book in real life, but you can have them in this, find a projector and they play this. This movie that the man in the high castle has his hands on, and it shows the Allied forces winning the war. So yeah. It's a kind of a, you know, it's kind of a mind fuck right there.
check the box.
Check the box.
Got it. Checking it right now.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, no, that's the moment in the pilot where I was actually... That's not the moment where I bought in, but that moment made me just laugh. And I thought, oh my God, I don't even know what I'm seeing here. I don't know what this means. I don't know how they pay this off, but it's such a great moment because they show actual footage of the Allies winning the war. So like, what, where, huh?
Yeah. And I watched six of the 10 that they, well, 10, they're gonna have 10 this season. I watched six, and I know they're probably not gonna tell us in the first season unless they do in the last four. But Jason, the thing that struck me was, Okay, I really want to know, are we living in an alternate universe? Because it's the whole thing is alternate history.
Right.
But because Philip K. Dick was a sci-fi writer, even though this book was a realism book.
Yeah.
Is the future going to be like we're in an alternate universe and you can still get there by spaceship? I don't know.
It reminds me of there's a sci-fi novel that I read called The Proteus Operations by a guy who actually lived in my hometown for a while, James Hogan. And the premise of that is that the Nazis win World War II, and it's this dark kind of future where, they're about to take over America, and it's the 70s, and they build a time machine, and they go back in time to change the outcome of the war. And what they do is they change their agents who go back in time. Everything they do creates our actual history. So the whole premise there is that they're rewriting the past, and what they do leads to our history. It's a really clever idea, and that came up when I was watching Man in the High Castle. Like, are they going to do something like that, or is this much more kind of like there are these two parallel time streams where we win, we lose, and they've got some vision into it. I don't know. It's but it doesn't. It kind of doesn't matter because, like you said, the tone of it and the look of it, and that moment, my buy-in moment was the moment where they change the friendly sheriff changes the flat tire, and you've got this in the pilot, and you've got this whole like menace because they're smuggling things, and you feel tense when you're watching it, but the guy just changes the tire and it's fine, and they like share a sandwich, and you're like, oh, okay, I was expecting this to be terrible. And then the ash comes down and he says, oh yeah, that's when we burn all the people.
Right.
Is on Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. So that's the ash from the hospital where we burn all the cripples and the mentally deficient and the gays. Mm-hmm. We do that today. And you're like, oh my God, because that's that moment of the just the casual nihilism of Nazi Germany in America. And it's pretty great. Pretty great stuff.
Yeah. And I think that in America, I'm certainly not going to spoil the show. I won't even spoil the review. But basically, in my piece coming out Tuesday, I say that just what you just said, that's enough to really take you through four or five episodes. I just spent the whole first – I mean, the story is pretty good. It moves a little slow in parts, but you're like, okay, man, I see a couple of red flags popping up, but I don't care about them right now because I'm so interested in how we shot this and this, what the sets look like. It's shot outside a lot. It's pretty interesting. It's not until – just somewhere probably at the end of the fifth episode, beginning of the sixth, where I was like, okay, now I want you to tell me about some of these things that don't quite seem right.
Yeah.
And that's where I had to stop watching. So I don't know. But yeah, I think it's definitely something people are going to want to watch. And the other thing, you talked about the casual nihilism. It's really interesting to see Rupert Sewell the thing that people can't get their mind around, even though we're not Americans technically, like American Nazis.
Right.
Like we've come up that our kids have grown up and they're like, they're Americans, but they've got the Nazi uniform on.
Yeah. Cause it's like 15 years after the war is over. So
yeah, 17 years. And so no accents for a lot of the people.
Yeah. So people should know, if you've got Amazon Prime, the first two episodes are available now and all 10 available November 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Looking forward to that. That's a good one. Let's see what else your colleague Mr. Feinberg reviewed Jessica Jones, which is coming out on Netflix. I'm excited about that one.
I am too, actually. I'm gonna watch that. Mm-hmm.
Look at that. And then hopefully they won't you won't have that Daredevil moment where they shoot at her and she she's actually got powers, so if they shoot at her, maybe bullets can't stop her.
I like that people have powers. I want that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is, as we've said before, like, that's the problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Set in a superhero universe. No superheroes in this show. Shh. It's like, why? Why are we even watching? That's also November 20th. Good Lord, there's going to be so much TV to watch.
Oh, it's coming. Like, it's all coming down.
Just cancel your Thanksgiving plans and watch TV.
Well, and look, last week everybody on my Twitter feed was like, oh my God, Master of None with Desi Sansari. And then I haven't even finished that one yet. I watched the first five or whatever to write about. But I didn't. Now I got to watch the next five. And it's
so
like,
much.
Oh God, it never ends.
Too much.
You know? And I did promise people on this podcast that I would go back and finish Daredevil. I still do that. It's still there. It'll happen.
Sure. keep telling yourself that. that's in times of confusion, that's all we can cling to.
Well, I have to say that if you read this thing that Dan and I did, one of the mostly the unsaid part, although I do hint at it in the last sentence, is that I think maybe we're taking a little pleasure in the fact that this next batch of Amazon Pilots are not that good.
Thank goodness there's no show I have to watch.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, we came up with like two that I think we kind of both want to see for different reasons.
You got to be don't you think you have to be less generous in general now? Like, I mean, you've made this argument before. It's like there was a time when you'd see a show and you'd be like, well, it's okay. Maybe it'll get better. And now you're like, it's never going to be good enough.
Yeah, now it's just like, show me something I don't know, show. Good job, show.
It's tough for shows. Hard out there, yeah, for shows.
It's hard out there for a show.
In the times of confusion.
That should be,
you got
that
it.
Should be our new thing. All right, it's hard out there for a show.
It's going to be a folk song that we're going to sing, and it's going to tell our story in flashback.
I'm telling you, people, even though Dan didn't like it, I think there's something to be done in this Patriot series.
All right.
I think it's going to happen. All right.
Okay. I'll check it out. You want to get to the listener feedback?
It's always my favorite portion.
It is. It is. Really quick. So Brando from the 301 says, why is CBS going with Colbert over Supergirl as the post Super Bowl show? An interesting move. I think it's I think it's brilliant because they put like Kimmel on Super Bowl Sunday after the news, but Colbert is going right after the Super Bowl, not after the news on the East Coast. Immediately following the Super Bowl, they're kicking it right into Colbert.
Yeah, I think it's actually smart. Mm-hmm. I think it's smart because that's their product. That's their 5 days a week thing, and Supergirl is their, hey, it should be on the CW, but we stole it. And it's doing okay. And if you guys show up, it's great. I don't think they're super invested in Supergirl as far as like it matters to the bottom line. But Colbert, that's a money making machine that matters to promotion of other shows, etc. And they need him to break out. Yeah. And also, I mean, not to mention that Supergirl as a series just does not work well after football.
Doesn't fit. I think it's brilliant because after the Super Bowl, whether you're in the East Coast or the West Coast, I think the thing you want to see, I think sitting down to watch an hour-long TV show or even a half hour after the Super Bowl, that's a real hard sell. I know I know that gets good ratings because all the eyeballs are there, but I feel like Colbert is going to be a better fit. Like, get some comedy, get some interviews. It'll presumably be live because they'll talk about the game and stuff. I think that's a really good idea. I think it's a good, like, just as content after the Super Bowl, I feel like it's a better fit than pre-recorded drama or even comedy.
Yeah, and like you said, I think that ABC's done well with Kimmel when they put him in that spot.
Yeah,
whether it's sports or like Oscars or whatever, he's done great after that stuff.
Yeah, it's smart. Kevin says, "Hey Tim, tell us your thoughts about Mysteries of Laura."
I saw that. Clever man. Yeah. No, you don't even need to, that's what I said on Twitter. Oh, yeah. If you really knew the mysteries, you wouldn't be asking me. I'm just saying, who's watching that show?
That is the greatest mystery of all.
Who's watching it?
J-Rock on Twitter says, Detective Art and Sarah Manning on Orphan Black are a great cop, not a cop. I think that's
absolutely
well done. Well done.
That was a good one. I smiled when I saw that. Art and Sarah.
See, because his partner, Beth, was a cop.
Yes.
But Sarah, her duplicate, not a cop.
Not a cop.
Oh.
One of the great twists. Thank you for pulling that. That was a really good one.
Jacob from the 270 says, I've started Fargo and it's awesome. Tim, I see why The Hollywood Reporter keeps you.
Oh, thank you, man. 5 years and running.
Slightly threatening and yet very nice. From Twitter, Blake Heron, the creator of Agent X, writes, check out Tim's TV talk machine. Goodman torches broadcast and confesses shameful Brokeback Mountain love for Agent X. I thought that was, he's trolling us now. It's brilliant.
Did you see his other one?
No.
Oh, I see. Now that's that the onus was on me, perhaps, because he probably, you know what? He didn't link to you in it. He just said, because you watched it.
Yeah.
And I said, made a comment where I think in my response to you that you weren't drinking and that this was a problem, that you had need to drink it. And the guy who created William Blake Harron, who created Agent X, said, "Tell Jason that whatever, just to send me the bill for any alcoholic purchases."
Yeah, here it is. I got it. "Kindly submit Jason L. drinking tab to me for Agent X season. Will gleefully pay. Only please buy it BevMo. Much booze needed." All right.
I love this guy.
William Blake Harron. I do kind of love this guy, too.
He's like my new hero.
I'm going to have to keep watching Agent X. I do. Yeah. I'm actually a cheap date because I do go to BevMo and I buy I drink beer, basically. So super cheap date.
Yeah, I'm not the cheap date. That's the one he doesn't want. He doesn't want to pick up my wine tab.
Yeah. No, he doesn't. If you want your wine, you're going to have to get it at BevMo, too. Also, on Twitter, Catherine wrote in to say, "I have to say, I started laughing like a maniac when you guys mentioned the Mick LaSalle rule. I always thought that was just a rule in my family." No, Catherine. There are many people in the Bay Area who think if Mick LaSalle didn't like a movie, it's a movie to see.
I'm going to love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we have. Andy Vickery wrote in to say, "Irritating on-screen things that are not actually things. Whenever someone draws a sword, there's this metallic shring sound folied in." Right. "I'm not an expert, but did I read somewhere that this would never happen, as metal-on-metal contact like this will dull the blade's edge? So scabbards usually have sheepskin or something similar around the top to protect the blade." Andy in the +61 in Australia. Thank you, Andy. And yeah, That's absolutely accurate. Like, where is that shing coming from? Because that's like a metal-on-metal sound.
Yeah, it's Foley people going crazy.
Well, at this point, it's like, that's what people think swords do.
Yeah. Well, look, we've already had the gun guy. Was he also from Australia?
No, that was from England. Ammunition expert. Yeah.
Right.
Not a thing.
So we've had an ammunition expert and another guy in Australia. So now we've ruined the gun sound and the sword sound.
Yep.
You know what? People just who aren't Americans hate violence.
Yeah.
They hate swords and guns.
That's it. That seems accurate to me.
They're undercutting our fun.
Yeah. Sure.
Sword.
Shing. Shing. Just cocking that gun. Cock it 3 or 4 times. The bullets go faster. Okay, so Megan, our friend Megan, formerly of the 701, now from the 402, which is Nebraska.
Yes.
Says, "I can't get into Fargo and think it's because I grew up in North Dakota. I watched several episodes of both seasons and it's not quite right. I can't put my finger on it, but I think part of it is the idea of a crime syndicate and an open secret crime family just really doesn't fit with North Dakota crime. There are lots of interesting actual crimes in North Dakota's past, but as far as I'm aware, there was nothing like this because it goes against being North Dakotan. The other thing that the show gets distinctly wrong is conflating matter of factness with callousness. This is something the movie gets right, but the show gets wrong. A certain pragmatism is needed to live in a place that gets so cold. But part of that pragmatism is recognize the importance of being neighborly, since it can literally save your life in the cold North Dakota winters. You have to genuinely care for your neighbors because your life can sometimes depend on it, and vice versa. I realize this doesn't bother all North Dakotans, but it's just distracting enough to me that I can never quite buy into the show. I feel like I'm missing out on a great show because I'm one of 700,000 people who know what it's like to be North Dakotan." Thanks, Megan. That's a good one.
That was very site-specific.
They've lost the North Dakota demographic, is what they're saying.
Well, we don't know that. There could be others who are now listening to that and saying, "Oh, bullshit. I'm writing into the TV talk machine to say that as a North Dakotan, I'm on board." Somebody's going to do that. I know they will.
Going to circle the box.
Yeah. Color it in.
It's already checked. I'm going to draw some lines through it.
Oh, yeah. Once we
You've said destroyed the box.
It's
now.
All over.
Hobo Eric.
Is he
Hobo Eric is back.
He's like a correspondent now.
He is. He is our hobo correspondent from England. Hobo Eric says, "I've decided to be a giving Hobo Eric today, and I'm presenting you with three interesting British TV shows which may or may not be hitting your screens soon."
Oh, okay.
So watch for these, I guess. Number one, You, Me, and the Apocalypse. Rob Lowe, Jenna Fischer, and an international cast, a dramedy about the impending demise of the world, apparently coming to NBC mid-season. I hope it lasts longer than Welcome to Sweden.
Wow, yeah.
Two, The Last Panthers, Samantha Morton and John Hurt as jewel thieves. Exciting stuff, just premiered the other night, coming to Sundance sometime.
Well, just to go back, because Rob Lowe's in The Grinder, so I guess there's no future in the one that's coming over.
It must be short season thing. Number three, London Spy, Ben Whishaw as a spy in London. London Spy. Also just premiered this week. Complaints were made to the British FCC about gay sex scenes, so it's got to be good, says Hobo Eric.
Wow.
Thanks, Hobo Eric.
Okay. Thanks, Hobo Eric. So I'm going to look for that. In America, they will take the London Spy and they'll give him an American accent.
Or they'll rename it to something
Times Square Spy.
It'll be the American version. Yeah, that'll be the American version, but when they run it on cable, it'll be like British Intelligence or something like that. They'll change the name so it's more frilly and less direct. Mm-hmm.
And all references to Londonderry will be taken out. We don't know what that means.
Don't know. Steve, yeah, in the blustery and comfortably cool 808.
Yeah, that's Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. So nice. Our summer weather sucked. Speaking of sucking, the editor on Agent X needs to be fired. I know Tim was excited about this So Bad It's Good show, but I bowed out after the opening segment when X shoots a robe-wearing bad guy in the left shoulder, rendering him unconscious. He wakes a few moments later to battle X with a bleeding right shoulder. Now, more than a decade ago, I visited a production house in LA that was editing a TV series. And I actually, while I was there, they were flipping a shot because the director didn't like where the eye line of the actors and it didn't make sense. And when they flipped it to be reversed, it worked better. And as a result, one of the characters is wearing like an asymmetrical robe kind of thing. And I've seen that episode since. And you know, once you see it, you can't miss it. But that happens all the time. And you usually don't notice. They probably just flipped the shot. It was probably right in camera. And then they flipped the shot for some reason. And most people don't notice that. But good call.
That is good a call. Very, yeah. And Steve? I think that's... I mean, it's an editor thing, but there's the continuity people are the ones paid to watch.
Yeah, it seems unlikely that they you know made up his bloody shoulder and then put the blood on the wrong shoulder in another shot. It's probably more likely that the editor just flipped it later. So the continuity people are probably furious, right?
Yeah,
no, it's the right shoulder, but
right,
too late. John Quinn from Jolly Old England with a question and a sub question for me.
It's a very British name, John Quinn.
John Quinn, Jolly Old. Blighty, what is your favorite non-1984 Apple ad? And can you recite the speech from that ad? And as many people will know, I am a terrible nerd because I am terrible at quoting verbatim dialogue from things.
That is a limiting factor in your nerdness, isn't it?
I can't do it. I actually had a whole running riff with somebody on Twitter where we were just misquoting from The Princess Bride. You know, he's only partially dead, right? Just like I could get every single one of them wrong a little bit because I'm just very bad at verbatim. So I can't quote from the 1984 ad, nor will I try. What's my favorite non-Apple ad? I don't know. I'm going to say just completely on the spur of the moment that Oscars ad where it was the montage of people picking up the phone and saying hello for the iPhone the week that the iPhone was introduced or the month that the iPhone was introduced. Thought it was a pretty great ad. And it was literally just clips from movies of people answering the phone.
That's good. Yeah. Apple's made a number of really good ads.
Yeah, they made a lot of bad ones too, but they made some good ones. Mm-hmm. The Jeff Goldblum ad for the original iMac where it was, you know, step one, take it out of the box. Step two, plug it in. Or what was it? Step one, plug it in. Step two,
turn it on.
There's no step three. It was the there's no step three ad where Jeff Goldblum sort of as the narrator kind of loses it where he's like, there's no step three. Cause that was the whole idea. It's like, it's super easy to set this thing up. That was a good like technical ad, but I think the hello ad is brilliant. But yes, the 1984 ad is the best.
Yeah. I'm a fan of really good ads.
Yeah. Really good ads are it's not, ads don't have to be bad.
Well, currently, and this is actually an Apple ad, currently the snippet that I love is, unless I'm messing this up and it's not an Apple ad, but I do think it is the one, because it's a hometown guy, Steph Curry turning around while his shot's in the air and then it draining behind him.
Huh.
That's an Apple ad, right?
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. It is now.
I'm pretty sure it's an Apple ad. Yeah, it is now. And if it's not, Apple will say, no, that's not.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's an iPhone 6 ad. Yeah.
Yeah. So he throws up the three and turns around and looks at the video. And you can see in the back the ball go in. He's just brilliant.
Yeah. The artist formerly known as Wicked Machine.
Yes.
Checking in from Martini Town in the 90s.
He's now Shiny Failure, I think his name is.
He says, Tim, I have to thank you for talking up You're the Worst. I watched the pilot when it aired and it slipped into the background noise of last season, but after hearing you came around on it, I binged it on Hulu during the summer and it earned the season pass on my DVR. And while I found season one very entertaining, it's jumped up to appointment television with the storyline about depression. They're doing great Emmy-worthy work here. This week's episode was almost painful to watch. Yeah. This is strong work. What are your thoughts about You're the Worst, turn toward the dramatic, and thanks for the recommendation? I'm a little behind on this, so I'm going to... I edited that a little for no spoilers for people who are still getting caught up on it, but I fully agree, and I did hear about this episode that was this last week, that people are, like, there's momentum building for You're the Worst, it seems now.
Yes, there had been as a comedy, and I'm a tiny bit behind as well, but I know what's...
Yeah, you've heard the talk too, right?
Yeah, I know what's happening. And because that's not a spoiler part that's going to spoil me, but that's I think it's great that they did that. It's funny. I'll back my way into this. It's funny that it's become such a thing that now people are like looking at it in a dramatic sense rather than comedy. Like I saw somebody say, well, why wouldn't there be more like affection and kissing, and why wouldn't there be more? I mean, it's like they're approaching it from like, because there's this element of depression and you want people to help each other through it, why wouldn't there be more of that? Whereas just as you would not normally ever bring that up in a comedy, just because part of it was they don't do that as characters, basically. I think that the series taking this approach is good. Look, it's Stephen Fox, a great writer. And he felt comfortable that he could take it to show in this way, and keep it funny and make it a little touching. I think that's great. I'm all for that.
Let's move on to this one. Who's this? This is Matt in the +44. This is the bottle episode, Matt.
Oh yeah.
Hello again from across the pond. I have a massive pet peeve, as always, in terms of not a thing. Okay, here we go. Yeah. This is one of my favorite letters. I am an IT technician for a school solving IT problems over the phone. So sometimes little computer technologies things bug me. I usually let them slide. The one that I keep getting reminded of is Damian Lewis' show Life.
Yeah.
It was a good show. Uh-huh. Gone too soon. He and his sidekick need to access files in a computer technician's office. In order to distract him, one of the duo goes into a room with a conference desk with different computer screens and keyboards attached to them. There's a good 10 monitors and keyboards with flashy DOS-looking text. They pour a glass of water onto a keyboard. All the monitors start to flicker like crazy. The computer technician leaves his office and stands there tapping keys in front of what looks like a series of computers about to explode. Meanwhile, the other character uses the USB stick of contrivance to copy files neatly named in one subfolder level on the desktop and not in the backed up network drive. It's a race against time while the computer technician can't figure out why a standalone machine is causing a whole room to make monitors flicker while lead character number two stands crouched over a PC in an office with glass windows. I don't think I need to explain to you that they get out and the computer technician comes back after the screen stopped flickering. Also, it doesn't change the wet keyboard or at least let it dry out in the air let it dry out in the air conditioned server room. Is there any major thing in TV that has so defied the laws of computing that you constantly keep remembering it? Is there anything worse than Life? He's asking me this. I can't see Agent X being that bad. Well, it must be seen to be believed. Sipping tea in good old Blighty, Matt, in the +44. I don't know if I have an answer. There is so much that I mean, Scorpion attaching an Ethernet cable to a flying airplane is very high on my list of favorite things I have ever seen on television.
Yeah.
So that would be up there. And
from a car.
A car on the runway. And CSI Cyber, the whole pilot episode of CSI Cyber is pretty spectacular with what they do. So yes. I think there's so much bad. I would actually say the only things I can remember clearly are the good computer things because there are so few of them. Like Mr. Robot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I showed my class Mr. Robot and they were freaking out. It was so good.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
It is. It is.
I should show them Isolate Torso.
Oh my god! Well, you know, if you need some laughs, that'll pick them up. Here's a good one from Jenny down the block. In the 650? Clear something up that's long confused me. Why do networks track viewers who want shows delayed within 3, 7, or watch shows delayed within 3, 7, or 30 days? If I'm watching a show delayed, I'm going to be skipping over the commercials. Doesn't that mean I'm dead to the advertisers and therefore the networks? Well, I'm glad they track this info, since a lot of the shows I watch seem to disproportionately benefit. How are those of us who watch delayed any use to the networks?
Well, you watched it, so they need to track. They need to track viewers. They need to track demo. So they need to know your age and your. Well, I mean, if you're not a Nielsen home and you're not watching it on a computer, you're not trackable. So you're just part of the supposition of people being out there. So you're just part of the whatever group that says, well, this person with a box represents 100 people here. So you're just being represented unless you have your own box. But the reason that they do that is, well, for that you need to be tracked and total viewers and demo. But there's also, look, it would have been a industry killer if people said people who skip the ads are 100% skipping the ads and no one's watching it. That's not been proven yet, because some people, and I've actually seen this in action. My ex's family in Michigan. I was once there way back, and they, even though they had TiVo'd everything, they were not fast forwarding through the commercials. And I was, as you might imagine, apoplectic, like coming out, and I didn't have control of the remotes. Another problem. You taped it. How could you not fast forward through the commercials? It's the whole point. So there's that. So not everybody does it. And probably more importantly, there's a belief, because otherwise it would have been an industry killer. There's a belief in the television industry that even if you fast forward a commercial, you're still retaining it. And that's why a Berkeley-based company was bought by Nielsen not too long ago, within the last 7 or 8 years. They were researchers in Berkeley, went on their own. And what they said was, even if you fast, this was the TiVo, boop, boop, boop. So even if you fast forward on 3 on TiVo, you are, and you're looking at it. So you're in the room and you're fast forwarding it. They are saying, and this saved the industry, you are still retaining 50 to 75% of what you're seeing.
Huh.
So for example, if I fast forward through Stephen Curry hitting that shot, I'm going to see that it's Curry because I love him, and whatever image they show me, whether it's visual or it's a printed matter, I will recognize that it's the iPhone / Apple. So even if I fast forward it, somebody's going to say, hey, do you see that Apple ad with Curry? And I'm like, yeah. And as soon as I say yeah, then it counts. I watched it, basically. It sat in my brain.
Right.
So this company of these three guys, who are now, I'm sure, multimillionaires when they got bought, or more than multi, is that true? Is the science behind that true? I don't know. It was true enough to Nielsen to buy it, because if the theory was people fast forwarding ads means they're not watching or retaining any of your ads, then the TV business as we know it, broadcast wise, would be dead. So there you go. There's your short lesson on there's a company out there that says scientifically we retain stuff even when we fast forward it,
and so we believe it because it's very important.
And look, and I would just say anecdotally, I have stopped stuff.
Yeah.
And say, what is that?
I agree.
I've done that.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jenny. We go to, and this is a great letter, Mike in the 415. Hi, guys. Longtime listener, first time emailer, chiming in as a so-called expert on things the TV always gets wrong. I'm a longtime newspaper editor and page designer, and every single time I see a newspaper on TV, it irks me because it always looks wrong. A four-column mugshot on A1, a giant banner headline for a story that should be a brief on B2, and who designs a page with the story wrapping to the left? I've seen high school yearbooks designed better. On the bright side, once I'm inevitably laid off... 5 years, Tim. It's been 5 years. Maybe there's a second career awaiting me designing fake but better looking newspapers for TV. Congrats on your escape, Tim. Mike in the 415. I love this letter because you and I know, like Tim does. I was just watching. So my son wanted to watch The Flash. So we've been watching season one of The Flash, and there are so many newspapers in The Flash. Like, and Iris works at a newspaper, but now they're trying to back it off and say that it's a website because it seems unrealistic that there would be this healthy, you know, beautiful office full of young people at a newspaper, right?
That right. Seems,
I mean, there are superheroes, I'll accept that, but healthy newspapers, I can't believe it. And oh, the headlines, the fake front pages and headlines are so bad. The like Barry Allen's mother dies. There's this huge like banner headline on the front page that says Nora Allen dies, and the subhead is something like husband imprisoned for crime. It's like that doesn't make any sense. That would not be the headline you'd write. You wouldn't put it at the top of page one.
No.
And I am with Mike. I assume you are too, given your background doing newspaper stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't see those fake headlines without going not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it,
not a thing. Yeah, it's crazy,
and it's everyone. Yeah. I very rarely like the tech stuff. It's very rare that I see something and go, oh, they did that right. You know, it's a clip from out of a newspaper but not the front page, and it's sort of like on looks like it came from a back page, and that mugshot is just a one column thing wrapped around. You know, I sit up and take notice when somebody does get it right, but most of the time they don't bother.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's bad. If you've ever spent time, as most people who had a print life up until recently did, a lot of them came through college where you were mocking these up on your own by hand.
Yeah.
And there you go. You learn there that you don't do those things.
No, the novelty newspaper front page where it's like, we want to tell, I mean, this is the Tango and Cash thing, right? That like the end, I don't know if you remember that movie, the end of Tango and Cash, there's like literally a headline that's like Tango and Cash back together and a giant picture of the last frame of the movie. And it's this front, huge front page headline at the top of the front page of the newspaper. And it's like, why would that be a story? The cops who were suspended are no longer suspended, and you know them by their first name or their nickname. It's no.
I'm happy to say I've never seen Tango and Cash.
It's not good, but
okay.
But that is, but it, among its faults, its lovable faults, is the fact that it does bad headlines very well. They're completely, you know. I know it's important to your story that this happened, but it's not important to the newspaper. Even in fiction, the newspaper doesn't care about your story.
I think we have a trend in this podcast that should continue, and that is people of different industries. If you see yourself represented poorly on television, let us know.
It's a new Not a Thing segment.
Yeah, it's definitely like Department of Not a Thing.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to read these. We got two or three letters about Star Trek because we mentioned that last week. I'm going to refer people to episode 271 of The Incomparable, which we posted last Saturday, where we spent more than an hour talking about the ideas of like what a new Star Trek series could be, but also the first half hour, 20 minutes is pondering exactly what's in these letters, which is, is it good that CBS put it on streaming? Is it bad? Do they just think the nerds will pay for streaming? We talked about it a lot on that episode, so I'm not gonna read the letters again. But there's definitely a lot of question out there about this. All I will say is I think you don't ever underestimate the business savvy of Les Moonves. And it's easy to say it's arrogant, like, oh, do they think they're going to pay for that service? But I don't know. CBS does really well. Maybe they're right more often than they're wrong.
Dude has not been wrong very often. No.
Yeah. So maybe it's brilliant. I don't know. And we'll go out with one last letter. Karen from the 925.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Which used to be the 510. Was the 415 before that. He says, I have a solution to the problem of TV being too expensive to produce 7 nights a week. Back catalog. Okay. The big three networks have years and years of content they have already produced, some of which is crap, some of which was popular, and some critically acclaimed. What if NBC turned Saturday into 80s retro night and programmed Hill Street Blues and Remington Steele? Why not run Night Court and Mad About You in a comedy block? Is the network's goal to have all original programming or to have programming that will make money? ABC and CBS could do the same thing, and Fox is already bringing back the X-Files. Oh, burn. Could this be the way out of the death spiral? Kieran D., who misses the conversations between the existential French woman and French Walton. I miss those too, Kieran.
Who doesn't? The problem with that is that probably a lot of that stuff is not owned by the network.
Right. They aired it, but now it's in some catalog sold off to some syndication or cable channel somewhere.
Yeah. And if stuff that's that old, I mean, you don't have to go back that far to know that a lot of the networks didn't even have their own studios until recently where they made stuff. So they were, I mean, basically TV was a way, not too far back. I want to say way back, but it wasn't really that far, that long ago. It was cottage industry where everybody made their own shows and then sold them to the networks. And so the networks don't own them.
Right.
So only very recently was the idea like, hey, we should be a vertically integrated media company where we own our own product. So that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I like the idea. And I actually have written columns about stuff that they do own, air stuff that they do own. And, you know, and then find out stuff that's, you know, not on Netflix or not being sold into syndication, and how much would it cost to do some kind of nostalgia thing if it was on brand as far as like, yeah, it was a CBS show, you know, All in the Family or whatever. I mean, they couldn't do that, but like something along those lines. Do anything for Saturdays, but don't let it just be this big death pothole. I don't know.
Right. Right. Why not run, speaking of the X-Files, why not run some classic? I know it's sold in other places too, but take some classic X-Files and run those on Saturday nights leading up to the relaunch or something. I don't know.
Well, look, in short, part of it, I mean, if you get past the, you know, who owns it thing, if you just got it to the point where we own this, we have it, we can put it on, the reason it's not being done is because nobody thinks like that in the business. And I don't say that dismissively. It's just really true. I've actually talked to people like, why don't you do that? Oh, I don't know. No one's going to do that. Yeah. Will people watch? Well, we won't know unless you try it. You know, like everybody's afraid to do something original and that no one else is doing.
Right.
And there's nothing
more original than running reruns.
Right. I was like, you guys have done that forever. And now you stopped doing it. How about go back? I think that anything but giving up was what they're doing. They're giving up on Saturday.
Right.
So anything but that. How could it be any worse is what I say.
Ah, that's true. Good point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've reached the end.
We have.
Another one down. So much to watch.
Yes. And more. Although, bright light for you people out there. The it's future of those Amazon pilots didn't look so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Although soon, Netflix critics say Netflix just came up with 5 new great shows.
Soon, all TV critics will have a pact. You guys are all going to make a pact that no new shows. Just like they're just saying, they're all bad.
No new shows. Yeah, we're just going to say, you know what? This is not happening.
Yep.
This is not a thing.
No new shows are not trustworthy. You just can't watch them.
And there are so many more coming, and that's the sad part.
Some of them will be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have to watch them.
We all need bigger clocks.
Yeah. More mm-hmm. hours in the clock.
More numbers. Put some more numbers mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening. Here's how you get in touch. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can go to Facebook, like Hobo Eric. That is facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. You can even leave comments on the post by Hobo Eric and interact with the famous, become one of the millions of followers of Hobo Eric by going to Facebook. And... of course, Twitter, you can tweet at us at TVTM, and I am at Jay Snell, and Tim is at Bastard Machine on the Twitter. And that's it. Tim, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Always. See you next week.
All right, I got some Agent X to watch. Bye, everybody.